Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Very good. We've got a group back. So I just the clean call for Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. I say that just so that we've marked the recording, so people know which day this was recorded on. So as we usually do, do you want to? Has anyone any announcements to make? Obviously, the first one is that Tamara is not hosting today. This is Scott Carley here from the College of Exploration. Tamara is en route someplace from Boston, someplace on a train, on a noisy train. So she's not calling in today. So any other announcements?
Oh, I have an announcement. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. This is Minda.
Yeah.
Hey, Minda.
Sorry. Hi, it sounds like I came in just in time.
That's it.
It's like perfect timing. For some reason, I had trouble getting in, but I'm here now. I just wanted to say that NCSC just released its Friend of the Planet Awards, and I mentioned this on the Clean Listserv, but ACE was one of our winners this year. So we're going to have a special dinner that they'll be invited to, and it's pretty exciting. So definitely kudos to ACE for all their good work. And the other thing I wanted to say is that NCSC has been involved with the California PTA, and we're pushing forward a climate change education resolution at the end of the month at the larger PTA meeting in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And the California PTA is the largest in the country, and so if it gets pushed through here, they're going to try to bring it nationally, so there'll be a national PTA position on the teaching of climate change, which would be fantastic. So as more information comes out, I'm going to be sending it out to folks on the Clean Listserv, and other folks might be interested in either being involved or lending support or just advertising it, because I think it could be a really exciting opportunity.
Cool. What's the national organization of PTA? Like, is it just PTA? Is there
a
national
PTA
housing?
I'm actually learning about this. It's really interesting. So there's PTA capitalized,
uh-huh.
and that's the official national nonprofit group, and they do like audits and all kinds of things, and they have sort of leadership. And then there's sort of lowercase PTAs that exist everywhere. And mm-hmm. so whether or not your school is part of the bigger one or just has its own regional one or its own school one varies a little bit. But California is has the largest of this one particular type of PTA, which is the big one.
Hmm, cool.
Yeah.
More complex than you realize.
Oh, my gosh. You have no idea. I just thought it was like, oh, it's like a small PTA. And then as I'm learning more, I'm like, wow, this is really involved. So, yeah.
Good.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. So hopefully it'll get passed.
And kudos, of course, to ACE. Done amazing work over the last couple of years. So I'm glad they're getting recognized.
Yeah, they're terrific.
Good. Any
this
other
is Julie Puttick. Oh, yeah. This is Julie Puttick. I wanted to make a pitch for anybody who's involved in place-based climate education to sign up for an ADU session. It's one of the – I'm convening it with Brian Drayton. And so far we have one other person signed up. So talk to the educators you know. To get
okay.
more talk.
And that's for AGU, the American Geophysical Union?
Yeah.
Great. Well, and that's a little bit of a segue just to reiterate what Tamara said in her announcement email this morning, that we're still looking for conveners for some of the sessions and trying to set all of that stuff up. And as I guess most folks know, Tamara is sort of chairs that committee, so she has some clout, shall we say, in terms of how all that stuff gets pulled together for the fall meeting at the American Geophysical Union in San Francisco. So if anyone is interested in participating, and I think she mentioned particularly higher ed and informal education, then really looking for conveners for the sessions for those two areas. So. Just a reminder, in case you didn't see the email this morning. So anything else? I can't think of anything here from Washington State.
Oh, hi, Scott.
Yeah.
This is Jane Hines Fry, and I just put on this morning an announcement for the courses we'll be offering for middle school, high school teachers this summer in Massachusetts. So please take a look at that, and do know that occasionally we have people come from out of state and say that's just a great time to go to Massachusetts and participate in these things. So you're all invited.
So Jane, is one of the sessions you're going to do, is that going to have systems thinking in it too? Because I know you and I talked a little bit about that earlier.
Yes. You helped me with that a lot. We're going to be doing this one. I've actually learned a lot from this community on how to structure this course. Mm-hmm. We will be reaching across the science. Sciences will be reaching all across the Common Core. The one that I'm running is called Exploring Energy and Climate Change, Science, Systems, and Solutions. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're going to do some of the systems activities that were in the resource that you sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also, I just got the Energy Forum materials from Bora that have been produced by NAAEE. So, and I have Mark McCaffrey's book. So I think all of those resources are going to come together for this opportunity, and I'm really looking forward to this.
That's great. It's a great example also of the collaborative work that we all do together. So this is great. Excellent.
This is major collaborative.
Why we're here. Good. Anything going on there? Okay. Hopefully that's all. Any other announcements? Okay. As I think everyone knows, we're going to have a presentation today from Kristen Poppleton and Jocelyn Harris from the Bill, the Will. I call him Bill. It's Will.
Some people call him Bill.
Yes, yeah, but I don't know him personally. at the Bill Seeger Foundation. And they're going to be talking about a really exciting project called Climate Minnesota. It's got lots of interesting elements to it. And there's an abstract on the webpage and also, more importantly, a website link. So if you want more information, just please follow up with that or with Kristen and Jocelyn. So please jump right in. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Scott. So this is Kristen, and you hear my voice a lot on the calls, but I also want to introduce my colleague, Jocelyn, who is on with me today. So, Jocelyn, you want to say hello?
Yeah, hello, everyone. This is Jocelyn. Thanks for having me on the call today. I look forward to telling you all about Climate Minnesota with Kristen.
And we're really excited to be able to share with you about this project today, just to be able for us to practice talking about it more, because it's really been in our heads in development phase, but also to get lots of questions and feedback from you guys out in the field doing this kind of work as well. So that's one of our big goals here, because we are in just starting to implement this phase. So it's a good point to get some feedback. So hopefully you either downloaded the PDF or the PowerPoint. And so right now I'm just on the first title slide, but I'm going to go to the next slide, which is slide 2. And for those of you that are not familiar just with us, to start out, the Will Seeger Foundation, we were founded in 2006 by Will Seeger, who is a polar explorer. And he founded us really out of his concern for the impacts of climate change that he was witnessing in the polar regions. I think one of the biggest significant moments is really when he read about Larsen B ice shelf crumbling into the ocean. And that was something that he had actually crossed in one of his expeditions, and actually the longest crossing of Antarctica, which could no longer occur. And so we were founded really on this idea of being an eyewitness to climate change, and not just Will himself, but empowering others to be eyewitness. And we'll talk a little bit that this project kind of stems out of that. And so we were founded, I'm moving to slide 3, with the mission of educating and empowering people to engage in solutions to climate change. And we have two main areas. our Emerging Leaders Program and our Education Program, and then policy kind of runs through each of those programs more strongly, our Emerging Leaders Program. And we won't be talking about that today, but it's a fantastic program working with high school youth in the metro area as well as millennials throughout the Midwest. And we'd love to talk about that at another time. I think we did a couple of years ago talk a little bit more about it. Our education program, moving on to slide four, we work with educators, we work with students, and we work with the public, providing science-based interdisciplinary educational resources on climate change, its implications, and solutions to achieve climate literacy. And historically, we've really worked with educators primarily, and then a little bit with students. And this project was really leveraging some of the work we'd done with the public and thinking about how we could do it on a larger level. And so that's one of the reasons we're really excited about it, to be able to move more into that realm. So I'm on slide five now. So the way that we realize our mission, we develop and share curriculum and online resources. Our curriculum is free to download from our website. I encourage you to check it out. We also offer professional development for informal and formal educators, and our summer institute is coming up in June. I also encourage you all to sign up for that and come visit us here in Minnesota. We host public outreach events, and then we maintain and grow partnerships, which really is how we get the work done that we do. So moving forward to slide number six. So today, like I said, we're here to talk about our new big project through the education program and the organization as a whole, Climate Minnesota, Local Stories, Community Solutions. And going forward to slide seven, this project was really based out of a lot of things that we were observing, what we were reading in the literature, what we were hearing from our partners, hearing on clean calls. But this need to really increase climate literacy and not only increase knowledge of climate literacy, but promote sustainable behavior change. Focusing here in Minnesota, and doing this through sharing knowledge from local experts and through stories of people, real people that are being impacted by climate change and also their solutions. And I'm not going to really go deeply into this, but moving forward to slide eight, if you're interested down the line, I love logic models personally. I know it's not something that everyone loves, but this is a logic model of the project if you want to get deeper into how we lay that part out. But we're going to really flesh this out throughout our presentation. Moving to slide nine. So the funding, the major funding for this project comes from Minnesota's Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is constitutionally dedicated funds actually that come from lottery dollars that are spent in our state. And it's essentially a grant-making process, but you go through a application process, and then you go through presentations before a citizen and legislative commission of individuals that kind of pass you through. Your project becomes part of a bill. It goes through Senate and House, and the governor signs it. It's a fairly long process, but it's a pretty neat availability of resources for our state that focuses on environment, environmental education and research projects. We also have some support from our Pollution Control Agency as well as the McKnight Foundation. And the project came through from the Wilseeker Foundation, but along the way here we've picked up another partner, which we'll talk a little bit more about, at the University of Minnesota, the Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships Project Program. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. Moving forward to slide 10. The big outcomes of this project are convenings, which are being held throughout our state. We're holding 12 of them, as well as two educator workshops, climate action teams, which are our peer groups that will be, we're identifying in each of the communities where the convenings are held, a collection of stories that highlight Minnesotans and their how climate change is impacting them, as well as solutions they're engaged in, and then a television production, which we're working with our public television station to create a production that highlights stories of Minnesotans and climate change, as well as experts in Minnesota commenting on their stories. And that's slated to be complete this spring with broadcast in the fall of 2015. So moving ahead to slide 11, which what we're going to focus on for the remainder of this is really talking about these convenings, which has been a really rich and interesting process preparing for them. We will learn how our efforts play out here in the next couple weeks as we start holding these convenings. But we're going to kind of give you background on the framework that we are designing them on and the process that we're going about getting ready for them. So slide number 12, hopefully you can see that on the right. There's a map of Minnesota. Each of those bubbles are locations of convenings for the state, the metro area. If you're not familiar with Minnesota, St. Paul, Minneapolis is down there around this yellow sea, so that's the metro. The rest of our state is fairly rural, with agriculture dominating the south and central northwest, and then large coniferous forests in our northeast region, and then kind of central transition zone in there up at the kind of running down the middle of the state. And on the left, you'll see a list of convenings, locations, and where they're being held throughout the state. We are none of the convenings are actually being held in the metro area. Two of them are being held in a southern and a western suburb of the state. So moving ahead, 13, and actually I'm going to go talk just a little bit about the rationale behind this project and the framework we're sort of hanging it on. So slide 14, first of all, here in Minnesota, and as most of us are seeing climate change happening in our states, it's happening here in Minnesota. And this just gives a visual of Minnesota is home to three major biomes, coniferous and deciduous and grassland or prairie biome. And over the last 100 years or so, a little bit less, we've seen a shift in the meeting point of those biomes, a place where they would survive and thrive. And so the forecast with that, of course, is that by, I think, 2100, most of the state would be within a prairie biome ideal setting, which, of course, our state is not going to be all prairie, but that's what would ideally survive here. Going ahead to 15, we also, here in Minnesota and the National Climate Assessment throughout the Midwest, we're actually a huge part of the problem as it relates to climate change. We have a highly intensive, energy-intensive economy with a lot of coal-burning fire plants and also a lot of need, of course, to heat and actually cool our homes as well up here. But we also have a large, large potential for wind and solar and can be part of the solution. So that being another big rationale behind the project. As far as thinking about designing the project, I'm moving ahead to 16. We're very cognizant of the fact of just delivering the climate change information is not going to be helpful. The information deficit model, of course, doesn't work. And really focusing on this public engagement idea, which means more that People need to take part in their learning. It needs to be active, and it needs to connect with minds, hearts, and hands, as Moser points out in this article. And I should just mention at the end of my slides of the PDF here, there's a list of references that go much more deeply in for those of you that are into reading up and learning more about some of the what into our framework. But slide 17 is sort of the summary, what comes around, what we've boiled it all down to when we're thinking about designing these convenings. So first of all, starting with the community and what they care about and connecting on common values really guides each of these. And so these are very community-centered convenings. Each of these communities, as I talked about earlier, they're in different sectors of the state with very different economies and different population demographics. And so we really are not thinking, like, what does Minnesota want, but it's what does Marshall, Minnesota, what are they interested in? What are their needs? What are the impacts, the climate there? Number two, we're striving to make these events a mirror of the community. And by that, we mean we're aware of the demographics of each of these communities and trying to make sure that the folks that are represented presenting as well as participating represent the economic, the social, and the ethnic background of the people in the community. We'll talk about challenges at the end of it, too, so... This is, of course, what we hope for. We're recruiting peer groups, knowing that when people come in a group, they're more likely to actually do something because they have other people as sort of that they know are also interested in what they're interested in and also might hold them accountable. We're focusing on local impact. So, like I said, with the state being very diverse, from a natural resource perspective, impacts are different, whether it be agriculture, whether it be Lake Superior flooding. They're very different areas. We're solutions-focused. And once again, in a very local sense, thinking about what resonates with people locally. We recognize the idea that stories really connect people to an issue and make it more relevant. We are including trusted messengers of each community in terms of science and solutions. We're providing real and very tangible solutions, and like I said, we'll go more deeply into this. And then we're providing multiple opportunities to engage in different ways, and that's kind of seen played out throughout the convening and after, knowing that people... When they write something and then they say something and then maybe they move their body, they're going to be more likely to maybe move forward and do something. And then there's follow-up with this. It isn't a one-stop event. We're trying to actually include some follow-up afterwards. So with that, I'm going to stop talking, and I'm going to let Josna jump in here and talk about how this has all been playing out in the real world.
Hi, this is Josna, and I am the education coordinator at the Will Steger Foundation. And my role in Climate Minnesota Local Stories Community Solutions is to coordinate the 12 public statewide convenings. And you can follow me. We're on slide 18 here. So each of these convenings really have a local approach. So with our agenda, we have, which we'll go through in a moment, we have various items that we're filling with community members, stories from the community. So every aspect is really has this local feel. So in starting with the community, we really want to identify what do community members care about, how are they experiencing climate change impacts, and what solutions are they currently engaged in. And with our online storytelling collection, this is a way to gauge how impacts are being felt across the state through personal storytelling. And we recognize that storytelling is really has a potential to be a very effective way to communicate on climate change. You know, when you have something like climate change, which can be very scientific and factual and lots of data involved, sometimes that can feel very abstract and far away. And so by using personal stories to talk about climate change, you're really creating kind of that emotional connection and the ability for other people to resonate with pieces of your story. It also gives it sort of this local feeling and an idea of how we are experiencing different impacts across the various biomes in Minnesota. And so the storytelling collection is an invitation to all Minnesotans to share their stories, either through a written blog article or a podcast, which could be recorded through a smartphone or device. And so that's one aspect that is really important while we're kind of painting this picture of the broad impacts that people are seeing through stories. Also, our partnerships have been key in being able to connect with local communities. One of our partnerships is with the Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships at the University of Minnesota Extension, and they have a regional staff member on ground in each of the communities that we will have our Greater Minnesota convenings in. And that has been really helpful because we're coordinating these convenings from our office in Minneapolis in the metro area. And so in order to be able to identify what the issues are in these communities and the stories that are there, it's been really key to talk to people on the ground in identifying those, those important community factors. And then climate action teams, Kristen mentioned that we would like to have peer groups. So climate action teams are groups of like-minded people that are coming to the convening together as a group and engaging in one of our solutions that will be offered there. And so what we're doing now to develop that is to invite climate action team leaders to bring their colleagues or friends or neighbors. And this is an opportunity for us to really mirror the community, so reflecting the demographics, including the range of perspectives. So we're targeting not just environmental groups, but really trying to include people that maybe normally wouldn't be included in this sort of effort. And then we also have evaluation development. It's, as we're talking to groups that are conducting similar types of projects across the state in regards to climate change, we've heard over and over again that they're very interested in finding out what will be some of the outcomes from our convenings, lessons learned, and really understanding what communities want to engage in or where they're at. So evaluation is, of course, a very important part of that. We have a pre-survey which is linked to our RSVP for each of the convenings. And Kristen will talk more about that a little bit later on. We also have a post-evaluation to determine how behavior change might have been influenced. And then we have also our outreach includes printed materials, and there's a sample of a photo on the right-hand side. That's the front of our postcard for our Bemidji convening, which will be on April 14th. And so that is being mailed to our contacts in these local communities and then also our regional partners and their contacts as well. And so we can move forward to slide 19. And here are some examples of partnerships that we have, not only statewide, but also on the local level. So we have at each of our convening locations multiple organizations that are helping to advance the presence at Climate Minnesota. And then moving ahead to slide 20, walk through an agenda outline for each convening. So we'll begin each convening with a resource fair that lasts a half an hour. And This resource fair will have 8 to 10 tables for community resources that are either engaged in solutions to climate change or are helping to build general community resiliency. And then the convening will begin with a welcome, and ideally this the welcome is given by a trusted local person. So for each of our spring convenings, this person is the mayor of the community, and we'd like to continue to have the mayor as the person to do this in the communities where it makes the most sense. And then we'll hear from a person to talk about climate change impacts in that are specific to the community. And so the person that will be speaking at 6 of our convenings is Mark Seeley. He's a climatologist for the University of Minnesota. We also have other speakers, which I believe are on the next slide, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. And so we really want to get very local and specific about the types of impacts that specific community is seeing now. And then we'll have a chance to, or let me back up for just a moment. Before we hear about the science, the facts, the trends about climate change, we want to ask the convening audience a connecting question. And so that question, before they hear about those impacts, is, what do you value most about your community? So people are starting to think about maybe a specific place or, you know, just in general what they value about their community. And they'll be able to write one word with that answer on a piece of paper, and then we'll ask them to hold it up so that they can see their neighbors and what they value. And then we'll hear about the impacts. And then after they hear about the impacts for that community, we'll ask another sort of connecting question, and that will be, in light of what you have now learned, how does that threaten what you value most about your community? So we're sort of taking them through the range of emotions that they might be feeling. And we recognize that oftentimes with a typical climate change talk, people might feel threatened or scared. And acknowledging that is a big part of being able to move past that. The next aspect in our agenda is a storytelling panel, and this will include 3 community members who are engaged in solutions. That panel as much as possible, we would like that panel to be reflective of the demographics of the community, and then also we would like those stories to be different enough from each other so that they are giving kind of a representation of the impacts specific to that area or the solutions. And then we'll ask another connecting question. We're calling it a provocative question, and this is how do you feel about tackling climate change solutions? So we're going to move into sort of, you know, they've heard from the storytellers in their community about local solutions, and hopefully at this point they're feeling inspired about what they might be able to do themselves. And that's a segue into the last aspect of our convening, which is a 30-minute solutions workshop. So we'll offer 5 different solutions through these solutions workshops, and each of those solutions will be presented by local resources. So they'll be very place-based and local and specific. And the next slide is 21, and this goes into a little more detail with the trusted messengers that we're including.
Could I possibly ask a couple questions?
Oh,
about
sure.
This, I think what you're doing is fascinating. And I think you're combining an awful lot of stuff that I've heard little pieces of from elsewhere, and you're managing to put it all together, which I think is awesome. Now, just one thing in here that I didn't understand and that you didn't mention, Bemidji?
Oh, so that is that's one of our communities.
Oh.
Yes, so that's sort of an example.
It's underlined because it could be replaced with 11 other locations.
Oh, so,
yes, so that's one of our cities in northern.
Location.
Yes. So sorry. Thanks for the clarification.
Right. And then
yeah, it's
all local.
Yeah. And what has your response been so far to this? I mean, given that you're not all that far from Wisconsin?
What is our response with
have the response of the people and the politicians in the state? Because your next door neighbor is having some trouble.
Yeah, they are having some problems. We can't figure out what's going on over there. No. Well, for the first thing is that this is a state-funded project. So this actually went through a major legislative approval process, which I'm not going to lie, there was actually debate about line item vetoing this project. So we're not immune in the state of Minnesota to that. However, I'll have Josna speak for it. The reception of, as she's been doing the major outreach for this, has been overwhelmingly positive in these communities.
And we'll be able to touch base on that when we talk about our successes, too, that it has been a really positive response from a lot of different community leaders and just people on the ground. And so it'll be very interesting to see what happens when we go to these communities and what we learn and how we can improve the convenings that we have after that. Was there another question?
Yeah, this is Frank. A quick question. You know, I appreciate the local focus, but given the causation of the emission, not just local, the cause of the climate change, the carbon emission, is local. And today, the president just committed our post-2020 levels for the United States, part of the international meeting. This cascading up and down work for you guys, or does it need to stay local always?
You were breaking up a little bit, but...
Yeah, sorry, it's a little noisy on where I am.
Stay local?
Yeah, I mean, there are major national and then there's major international initiatives in this space that totally relate to what Kasach does.
Right. So there are a couple of things about it. A, once again, it's a state-funded project, so we can't work outside the boundaries of our state, as far as outreach-wise. So funding-wise, we're not, allowed to do that. Secondly, as we're packaging the results of this, we're sort of, there's like different tiers of impact that we're measuring. So within a community, people, and we'll have a chance to talk a little bit more about this, but we're offering different solutions that individually have an impact, and then presenting as a together, this is a larger impact because we've chosen different sorts of solutions here, so we're doing this. And then beyond that, as I'm talking about tiers, we're looking at, on a statewide level, what have each of these communities sort of on an impact level? What's the numbers of people involved? What's the actual, if there's a way of measuring some sort of offset with carbon emissions from that perspective? And then we're thinking also, at a national, international level, we're doing some pretty robust evaluation of this project and really testing out a model that we hope to be able to share that is useful. I didn't catch who had spoken earlier, but the idea of it being pieces of things that we're hearing are effective, well, that's what we're doing here, is we're bringing in all these things that we're hearing, this is effective, but we haven't ever seen them all put together and seeing if it actually does do something. So does that respond to kind of what you're saying, Frank?
Absolutely. But Kristen, the specific one is this idea that that you want to feel hope in the context of a very pressing issue, and local isn't going to add up to solving the causation side. And so knowing that you have other larger initiatives going on in concert with your own personal or community level, I would imagine that somewhere in this matters to people who are talking about this.
Right. Well, and so that's one, like I said, at a statewide level at least, that's what we're trying to let them know, that as a state, you're one community of 12, and this is a movement within a movement within a movement sort of thing. But I that is, as you're saying that, a message that we should underline and make sure is in our list of the key messages that get kind of portrayed, is that this is a piece of a larger piece, and that's why it's actually a profound impact. So I hear you on that.
Great.
Yeah, fine.
And also, we're hearing messages from the national level and the state level, but because this is a public education project, we're recognizing that on the local level, peer-to-peer, people really don't feel very confident in talking about climate change just to their neighbors. And so how do we begin at that level to build their confidence in feeling like they can do that effectively? And I feel like that will really translate into the bigger picture of, you know, building capacity, starting
right
at sort of square one.
So this is Jean McGregor, and I have just a quick question about where we were in the slideshow on slide 23 with the solutions workshops. Are you thinking about them? What's the sort of unit of change you're thinking about with how individuals might receive these workshops? Is it about what you individually can do, or is it around what people can collectively do at the local level, or how have you been thinking about that?
Well, we're not quite there yet. Maybe you could hang on to your question for a moment. Oh, sure, yeah. Just to answer your question, so with our climate action team development, we'd like to see groups of people committing to solutions because we realize that individual action is not going to be enough. And so when people have a group of their peers and they're engaging in one of the solutions, they feel like they have support, and then they also have this connection to the local resource that is offering the solution, so they can begin to build a relationship there. So we have climate action teams that are coming to our convening. We'll have individuals.
And these people don't have imagination, and it's kind of like, I wish I thought of that.
I'm going to go ahead.
So we'll go back to slide 21, so with our trusted messengers. These are just examples of people that are involved with our convening. You may know of some of them, state climatologist Mark Seeley, locally known scientist John Abraham, state meteorologist Paul Huttner, and Paul Douglas, and Will Steger, who is a polar explorer and Minnesota hero, our community members from our storytelling panel, and then we're working with all of those people to coach them in the messages that they deliver. And then slide 22, our storytelling panel. So the way that we're going about collecting community stories is that we're hearing from our local partners on key champions, or people that have stories of solutions that they're engaged in, and we're conducting half-an-hour phone calls to hear their stories and to gather information. And then once we have that information, we're sort of strategically choosing which stories we feel like would represent the community well and the types of impacts. And slide 23, with our solutions workshops. So we're thinking about the types of solutions in these different buckets. So we have waste reduction, energy, land use, storytelling, stormwater management, consumer choices, local foods, and climate adaptation and innovation development. And we're really working hard to connect with local resources that are offering solutions around these areas, and as much as possible trying to find out what their current initiatives are and how they would like to connect with the community, and then having a specific ask that is tied to each of their solutions workshops. So what seems to take shape is the agenda for the solutions workshop is that they would give some background around the work that they're doing and how that is linked to climate change, and then they would have some sort of specific way for participants to implement or sign up for or engage in that solution. Slide 24. For follow-up, we have postcards that we are printing ahead of time, and we'll have them available at the Solutions Workshop. And participants can self-address this postcard, and it'll be very specific to the solution that they chose. And then they'll have this mailed to them at a later date as a reminder of the commitment that they made to the solution that they engaged in. We'll also have follow-up through webinars, and on our website we have a landing page for each of the convening locations that will have additional resources available, and also the storytelling panelists' presentations, as well as our local climate change impact speaker. And then we'll also have two educator workshops where we'll be able to specifically focus on what's important for that community in regards to education with climate change and energy. And then our documentary on Twin Cities Public Television will be broadcast this fall, and that will also create opportunities to connect again with these communities, and we'll have a discussion guide that will be developed to accompany that. And again, we have our evaluation so that we can go into to more detail with what came out of these convenings. And that leads us to our next slide. Kristen, do you want to speak about this piece, evaluation?
Yeah, I want to be conscious. We have 10 minutes left, and I want to have time for more questions and stuff. So I think the evaluation is sort of, you can read through it. We've got some pre, some post. We're doing some things during the convenings that are a little bit creative about figuring some things out. I'd love to talk about it later. and then we have two slides on successes and challenges, which I think I'd rather talk about challenges because I feel like that's more interesting and where we might need some more help. And then I'm looking at the rest of our slides. Joseph, should we talk through quick the challenges and then open it up? Or actually, maybe we should just open it up and folks can read through those if they see them as well. Because I do want to have a nice, hear some questions and feedback and such.
Any questions?
Unless no one has anything to say.
Well, I just want to repeat that I think you're the first place I've seen any action on recommendations from dozens of studies about climate change denial and people not wanting to deal with it and people tuning it out and people not thinking it's important. And there are a lot of these things all over the place, and you're the first ones I've seen who put them all together in one carefully designed package. I think I'm very excited to see what your results are.
Thank you. It's been really fun, actually, as things come out, as we've been designing this, too, because we've felt, just sort of like, yep, okay. I mean, reading through the recommendations is exactly what we're finding a lot of, opportunities to apply the research, but also just feeling like it's reiterating what we're already planning, too. So thanks. Yeah, we're excited to see if it all works.
This is Vicki from the Forest Service. Hi, guys.
Hey, Vicki.
Hi.
Hola. So I've gotten so used to suggesting individual actions that I'm curious to hear about. I heard you say that you're counting on community group actions, and so what do you envision to come from that?
Well, I mean, number one, we want people to feel, I think, like there's other people that are dedicated to doing this, because feeling like you're the only one out there, I think, is not empowering. So that's like a number one goal here, is having people feel like they're part of a community concerned about this and that is doing something, because that's like step one. they're also the fact that we're, I mean, Josna's done this amazing job in these communities. These solution workshops have a general theme that's the same, but they are very different in each community. And she has been able to find and leverage all these already established nonprofits as well as state resources like the Department of Commerce and energy initiatives, things, and them saying, yeah, we will provide an actual tangible thing to do and to present to a group of people. So they're all together in a group, and at the end of it, they're together saying, we together are going to do this. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I always go back and forth, and like impact-wise, there's multiple tiers of impact here. For me, you know, developing like a community collective efficacy is actually one of the biggest parts of this that isn't necessarily an impact on carbon emissions, but it's an impact on the collective whole of a community, which I think is very powerful and important. And then, you know, this funding is through our state, so we cannot do anything policy related, but I will say that these communities may be communities that have some leverage from a policy perspective, and so there is some interest, especially from McKnight, in terms of what happens next after this. We hit these communities in the next couple of years. What's our follow-up? And what happens from a policy perspective as well.
Kristen, you actually just hit my question. I was curious, this relationship between education and advocacy, we always deal with that. And it strikes me one of the interesting things about this design is that as the conveners, you can sort of stay on the education side, but the groups you're involved with that you're bringing in have a potential for doing much more advocacy work. And my hope is that if you are dealing with local communities, that what will come up in the discussion, which you in some ways can't control and are in some ways not accountable for, at least what gets discussed, that they will be talking about some of the local policies, things that legislation that might go on in their local councils, counties, whatever, and maybe even broader things like choices around infrastructure, whether it's support for different transportation policies, stormwater management, all these kind of big ticket things that often people don't think too much about. They, you know, they say, okay, that's too expensive, we don't want to do it, or oh, sure, we got to do that, and not see the relationship between that infrastructure investment and climate change adaptation and hopefully mitigation.
We're trying. I mean, it's a difficult line to we're being very, very deliberate about not. One of our partners in one of the communities is actually the Indigenous Environmental Network, and we've got some pretty serious stuff going on with our own little pipeline in Minnesota right now. We are very clearly stating to all our partners that this is a place we want people to come to, and not having to feel like there's any tension around those issues. I mean, a lot of these communities are also, there's some pretty, mining is, I mean, we've got some volatile issues in out greater Minnesota. So it's nice to actually be able to not have anything to do with the policy piece in this particular project, but see what happens after it, you know?
Yeah.
And I just have to say, it's been really interesting to connect with people at the local level, because a lot of times the people that have been identified by others as being engaged in solutions, or that they have a great story, when I talk to them, they're really confused about why I'm calling them, because they oftentimes don't relate that the work that they're doing is actually a solution to climate change. It's not the primary focus of what they're doing. And just getting people to reframe the way that they think about climate change has been really interesting. And just also with our asking people to think about their climate story, we're defining that term as, you know, how you've experienced climate change in your life or in your community. And a lot of times people don't think that they have a climate story, but when they give it some more thought, there has been maybe an event or a series of events that have led them to why they might care.
Mm-hmm. Good. In the process of developing the convenings and the other elements of this project, education ensues even before the event happens.
Yep.
I have another question. This is Joe Levine again. I've talked to a number of teachers who live and work in the Midwest. I have this sort of network of teachers I keep in touch with, and several of them asked after I gave a recent webinar on global change whether I had any specific advice for them because they happen to work in a town in a rural area where there's a lot of coal mining going on or fracking or something, and that that kids challenge them and parents call up when they talk about climate change. Have you run into any of that in some of your rural places, and what is your informed on-the-ground response to that?
Yeah, so we've been doing our teacher institutes for the last 10 years, and so I can speak from a teacher perspective in terms of we don't hear a lot about it here in Minnesota, but that is not to say it's not happening. And so that's one of the things that Josna and I are kind of preparing ourselves for in the next 2 weeks here, is if we do get some folks that come to these convenings that are doing pushback and sort of the deflection techniques that are associated with that. I won't say that we feel hyper-prepared for it yet. That's one of the things we're anticipating possibly being there, but honestly, if they're really going to show up there, it would astonish me, because that would mean they were a pretty serious denier when it came down to it. They wanted to cause a fuss or something. But I will not – there hasn't been a lot here in our state, I would say, on a super public level. Minnesota, nice sort of rules.
We're trying to keep our pulse on news articles that surface from these communities on things like that, but we have a really packed agenda for this convening. So all of this is happening in 3 hours' time. So even with our local impacts talk, we won't have time for questions and answers that will be addressed in the event itself. So people will be able to submit their questions in a different way. So we have to do some more work to figure out exactly how that will look. But so there's not a lot of opportunity in the large convening space to have people speak up about that.
Mm-hmm. This is Scott.
Hello.
I wanted to mention that we're about 2 minutes after the hour.
We are.
Wrap, or if there are a few more questions, and if Kristen and Justin are open to that, we could maybe carry on for a couple more minutes.
Sure.
This is Jane Heinz-Fry. I was hoping to get a clarification question.
Please.
Yeah.
On the slide about the solutions workshop, and this is somewhat following through on Jean McGregor's question. Mm-hmm. You have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 topics that are there in the solutions workshop. And I just wanted to clarify, it sounds to me like you have been able to identify local people who are working on those solutions already, and you're inviting them to, are they going to be talking about some of the solutions they're working on with the larger group, and then it's the hope that people who are participating will buy in to at least one of the solutions that's being further developed within?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the community members that are talking about solutions on the storytelling panel are not necessarily the same people that are talking about solutions at the Solutions Workshop. And so I can give examples of both the Storytelling Panel and the Solutions Workshop if that would be helpful.
Yes.
Okay, our Storytelling Panel, we have, for our Bemidji convening, we have One of our panelists is Jordan. He's a student at Bemidji State University. He's a Doris Duke and McNair scholar, and he's working on conservation corridor research. So those are the spaces that overpass highways, or interstates, so that it makes it easier for migration and biome shift to occur. And so he's done some research here in Minnesota, and he has ideas of how to improve the two conservation corridors that he's been working with. And he was also part of the student effort to ban plastic bottles at Bemidji State University. So that's an example of a story of a solution. And we also have Brandy, who is with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. And she was part of getting Leech Lake as a first Green Step tribal nation in Minnesota. And Green Step Cities is an existing program that is like a recognition program for cities to take steps towards becoming greener. And so they started a Green Step tribal nation. And so she's going to talk about her story with that and how that's a solution. We also have Dan in Crookston, and he is going to talk about carbon soil sequestration and the community garden at the campus, and how that has harvested 6,500 pounds of food for the dining services. So those are some kind of examples of stories that we'll be telling, but the solutions are very, you know, somewhat different. So, for example, with an energy solution for our Duluth convening, we have a Duluth nonprofit, Equilibrium 3, and they are going to talk about the Georgetown University Energy Prize and how Duluth is one of the leading cities in the nation to work towards energy solutions in this competition, and the reward is $5 million for the city that wins in engaging their community in energy solutions. And their specific ask is going to be that they will have coupons for home energy audits. And they also have workshops for renters. So we recognize that, you know, there's going to be a diversity of people attending these workshops, and not all of them will be homeowners. So that's an example of an energy solution. We also have Rail River Folk School offering a Consumer Choices Local Food Solution in Bemidji, and they will talk about the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, and they're going to talk about why local food is a climate change solution. They'll have as their specific ask a page of 5 to 6 coupons for local CSA, farmers market, farm-to-fork restaurants, and co-ops, and then they'll have an ask your retailer to carry these specific local brands. So those are some examples.
I have a question. This is Scott again. I'm curious whether you're going to record some of these stories in some way, video, I hope, because I think it would be very interesting to be able at least one time or sometime later to be able to share them. So a solution that comes up in one area, one local area, might actually resonate with folks in another area. So there's some cross-state sharing going on, too. Because that's not the way you're focusing this right now, but I can certainly see in the future that that could be very valuable for folks, too, to see a great example of a community farm, for example, a community garden, and its impact. That would be great.
So the storytelling panel, panel we're recording, and the speakers, the workshops, we just don't have the capacity to be in 5 workshops recording, but each of the convenings will be summarized on our website with, like, a live agenda, essentially, so you'll be able to read about each of those solutions. Probably, like, little case studies of each of them will be developed. So there will be a way to see that. But ideally, the stories and the science speaker will be captured. We're looking into our simple recording technology right now.
On your comment about solutions, you meant we do have some statewide resources that are partnering with local resources to offer solutions, like the Department, Minnesota Department of Commerce Energy Division, and then also our partnership with the University of Minnesota. They'll provide climate adaptation and innovation development at 10 of our convenings.
Are you? You mentioned that you're going to be doing something with TBT. Are they going to be, because it strikes me that if you come up with some stories that have good visual potential, you might be able to get them to do a show about putting together some of your stories.
Yeah, we're trying, we're trying to leverage that. The TPT documentary is is separate from the project in terms of the timing didn't work for them to be filming at our convenings because we wanted the production done before the project ended. So, but there is some talk about perhaps leveraging some of the more local TPT networks within the state to film some of it as well. So we're looking for that.
Not so much filming a convening, because that doesn't make very good TV. But, if somebody says they've got a farm that they're doing X and Y, or some homeowner mm-hmm. says they've got a novel way to do two or three things, those... If you record them in your convenings, and then present the folks at TPT with a list of, things, they can pick ones that they think would make good TV, and you could come up with something during and after the course of your project as a separate thing. It just mm-hmm. strikes me that the personal storytelling is so powerful. And, they don't have to be actually TV. They could also be video shot in modern TV style, but designed to live on your website.
Yeah, well, and that is, so the TPT production is being broken out. There's five stories, and they are focused on local foods and agriculture, and those five stories are being broken out into 7-minute clips or 10-minute clips on our website for next year, similar to the Climate Wisconsin site. I mean, that's our dream. We love Climate Wisconsin. See, there's great things in Wisconsin, but...
Well, yep. You guys really seem to have it all together.
I agree with where this gentleman is going with his comments. This is something you're doing of national importance, I think.
Yes.
You're setting precedents for more of this to happen, and you're showing best practice for how to do it, which was very thoughtful in putting, like you said, all these recommendations together into a community forum. So it's just connecting you with an entity who would want to tell that story for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
this is, bigger than Will Steger. What you're doing here, yes. So, I'm trying to think of, some of the... I know that, the first... If you get beyond public TV or whatever, I get some of our... In our network is like Lynn Cherry does mm-hmm. films.
Yep.
I think they would be interested in filming and helping to tell that story.
I know people here in Boston at Nova and our PBS station. I know some independent filmmakers who I think could possibly be very interested in something like this. I agree, it's of national, if not international, importance.
Well, send them our way. We'll plead our case.
Okay. And then one thing, have you had any contact at all with the people who are running the Southeast Florida Climate Compact group?
Sounds familiar. Are they one of the CSUP projects?
No, they're their own thing. I mean, what they decided to do is, although they're in the state of Florida where their DEP people aren't supposed to use the words climate change. What it is four counties, Palm Beach, Broward, Miami-Dade, and Monroe, which goes down through the Keys, have just basically mm-hmm. said, screw the state. When a grandmother who's lived in Miami Beach all her life sees the storm drain flooding at high tide for the first time in her 85 years of life, she doesn't call Rick Scott, she calls the mayor or the vice mayor
right.
or something like that. So those people have gotten together, and they've got this amazing dance going on where they're managing to sidestep the politics and do stuff. And it strikes me that there might be some interesting interaction that you could have with them.
Yeah, I'm putting them on our list. I mean, we've been doing a lot of we're getting more into the actual doing part now, but we did a lot of calls with folks around the country in the beginning here to get going, but I'm looking at their website right now. It looks very cool. We'll put them on our list.
And
I have not been in touch with them.
There's somebody on this listserv who is in South Florida in that area working, so I'm not being able to lay my hands on their email right now, but I can put you in touch with them.
Cool. Very cool. Thank you. Well, I appreciate everyone's input.
Sherry.
I know Lynn. I can be in touch with her, too, but, yeah.
I'll reinforce it because she's asking what our next steps are. And so she seems to be in the idea mode, and to me this seems very important.
I agree.
Great story to tell.
This is Mary Jo.
Well, we haven't done them yet, so let's wait till we get some done under our belt here.
Well, even if it has its challenges, it's like you're trying.
Yeah.
You know?
And in a very well-informed way.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Mary Jo Lieber. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry, I get confused on the star 6 and the pound 6. would you mind if I send your PowerPoint on to some other people? I think this is such a great idea. I would love to see us getting something like that started here in Virginia.
Very cool.
Yes.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a the clean site's public, so once we had it put up there, anyone could download it. And the recording will be up, correct, Scott? The recording will be up as well, so they could listen to the presentation.
It might take a day because Tamara has to send it up. Yeah, we'll get up as soon as possible. So with that, I think good wrap since we're about 16 minutes after the hour. Thanks to everyone, to Kristen and Jocelyn. That's great.
Thank you.
And
it was awesome.
Well, thank you. And please don't hesitate to contact us with questions or comments or anything. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Great. To have
great work. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Very
All right.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.